So today I'd like to reflect on aversion. An aversion means a strong dislike or disinclination. Buddhist texts describe a continuum of aversions from minor discomforts, unpleasantness, irritations, annoyances, frustrations, and disappointments to fear, anger, ill will, and at the most extreme, hatred. And part of me really has resisted exploring aversion. So I have an aversion to aversion. And I thought maybe after 4 years of offering Dharma talks here, I would finally dive in. I especially have an aversion to the minor aversions. So those little unpleasant experiences and irritations, I want to avoid the little discomforts. Put this back on. So I want to avoid the little discomforts of life, like being too cold or too hot. I especially just really don't like sleep deprivation. I don't know anybody who really likes that. My children bickering with each other. I want to avoid all of these things. I want to avoid certain people, those who exude like strong anger or hostility. I especially try to avoid. And then I wonder, well, why not avoid these unpleasant things? Why not seize the day and enjoy life to its fullest whenever possible? And don't those uncomfortable dimensions of life simply get in our way of enjoying and embracing each moment? So I'd like to consider two extremes: avoiding aversion and radically embracing aversion. So thinking about these as two extremes on the continuum, one of extreme avoidance and the other of extreme embrace. So what if we were to avoid all aversion? In a way, this is the story of the Buddha while he was Prince Siddhartha, born in present-day Nepal, sorry, son of the ruler of the Shakya clan. And seeking to protect Siddhartha from the miseries of the world, his father raised him in a secluded, opulent palace. And one descriptive passage in the text describes grand dinners and dances designed to keep Siddhartha happy and comfortable. During the dinner, the most delicious food was served, the most enchanting and beautiful dancing girls in the country performed, the most sensitive musicians played, and the finest puppeteers and magicians performed incredible feats. So that sounds pretty good. Why can't you just like live like that all the time, be happy forever? But there's a shadow side, right, to living a life of extreme opulence and shelter from life's discomforts. If we protect ourselves and our loved ones too much, we avoid life as it is, which is filled with change and impermanence. And we may not know how to cope with life's discomforts and irritations that do inevitably arise. So to continue the story of the dinner party given in Siddhartha's honor, sometime later that night, the prince awoke and was shocked to see all the beautiful people sleeping. What a sight! All the prettiest, most charming dancing girls, the finest singers, best musicians, and cleverest performers in the country, who, hours ago, were trying to make the prince so happy, were now all over the floor of the room in the most ugly, shameful, and loathsome positions. Some people were snoring like pigs, with their mouths wide open, some grinding and chewing their teeth like hungry devils. This alteration in their appearance made the prince even more disgusted and unhappy. So sometimes I wonder, what would have happened if Siddhartha had not left the palace and stayed secluded in this world that was created and designed for his own pleasures? So eventually, he would have witnessed his loved ones aging. He would have witnessed sickness and death. And just as happened when he did leave the palace on his own accord, he would have been shocked by the reality of life and would have experienced extreme suffering as one by one, those who were near and dear to him aged and eventually died. So when we avoid aversion, we avoid the truth of what is, that everything changes. Any attempt to control our experiences leads to suffering. Buddhism views aversion as one of the three poisons that leads to dukkha, loosely translated as suffering. So the desire to control things inevitably leads to disappointment because life is impermanent and ever-changing. We can't hold on to things the way we want them to be. And when we try to do that, we experience suffering. But I still wonder, what about those small discomforts? Like, why not avoid being cold or avoid foods or people that we don't like? And one way to think about these minor discomforts and irritations is that they prepare us to deal with the larger adverse situations that we will all face in life. So while we have a choice about our circumstances, we can practice with these little discomforts. We can work our way up to the larger discomforts, like getting sick with a fever. We can stay mindful in the experience of being sick with a fever and continue to kind of work our way up to larger and larger discomforts in life. Eventually, we're preparing ourselves for deeper losses, losses of loved ones, eventually the loss of our own well-being, eventually facing our own dying process. So as I say all that, just notice how you feel within your body. Like, notice if you sort of clenched as I talked about death and dying, sickness and old age. Notice if you kind of try to mentally push it away at all, or if you were just able to let that sit. So many Buddhists practice a daily chant that goes, "All things are impermanent. They arise and they pass away. To be in harmony with this truth brings great happiness." So Buddhist wisdom teaches us that to avoid aversion brings suffering, and to recognize and accept impermanence brings true happiness. So we can also explore the other extreme. What happens if we radically embrace aversion? Siddhartha did this in the form of extreme asceticism, or also known as self-mortification. And the story goes, after studying with some of the best teachers of his time and feeling he had not progressed toward enlightenment, he met five friends who had also left the palace and a life of luxury to become ascetics, or students of life, living poorly. For 6 years, Siddhartha struggled and tortured his body while his five friends supported and looked after him. "I will carry austerity to the utmost," thought Siddhartha. "This is the way to acquire wisdom." He practiced fasting, which was thought to be the best way to acquire wisdom. He lived on a grain of rice a day, and later nothing at all. His body became so thin that his legs were like bamboo sticks. His backbone was like a rope. His chest was like an incomplete roof of a house. His eyes sank right inside, like stones in a deep well. His skin lost its golden color. In fact, he looked like a living skeleton, all bones without any flesh. He suffered terrible pain and hunger, yet continued to meditate. For 6 long years, he did these practices, and in spite of the great pain and suffering, he did not find wisdom or the answers to his questions. He finally decided, these austerities are not the way to enlightenment. He went begging through the village for food to build up his body. And when his 5 friends saw this, they felt disappointed. They took their bowls and robes and left, wanting nothing more to do with Siddhartha. So we can take this practice of leaning into that which we feel aversion towards to this opposite extreme, denying life itself. And the Buddha, having experienced both extremes as a prince, a life where everything was extremely controlled and was protected, and even the smallest, he was protected from even the smallest unpleasant experiences. And at the other extreme, he experienced life as an ascetic, embracing aversion to the point of denying his body the basic conditions for living. And from these two extremes, the Buddha developed the middle way. And this was his first teaching upon awakening. He said, monks, these two extremes ought not to be practiced. There is addiction to indulgence of sense pleasures, which is low, coarse, unworthy, and unprofitable. And there is addiction to self-mortification, which is painful, unworthy, and unprofitable. It won't get you anywhere, is what he's saying. He said, avoiding both these extremes, the Tathagata, meaning the perfect one or perfected one, has realized the middle path. It gives vision, gives knowledge, and leads to calm, to insight, to enlightenment, and to nibbana. And what is that middle path realized by the Tathagata? It is the Noble Eightfold Path and nothing else, namely, right understanding, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. We might translate the word right into the word balanced, a balanced approach to life that might occasionally touch the extremes, but doesn't dwell in either of those extremes. And I love this metaphor for balance of a tightrope walker. You know, balance doesn't mean holding yourself so straight that you're rigid in life. You know, a tightrope walker couldn't just walk along the tightrope if they didn't sway, right, from side to side. That's the balance, is that we do go to the different extremes, but we come back into the center. And we don't live in one extreme or the other, we'll fall off the rope. So just to think about, what is this balanced approach when we think about aversion? What's a balanced approach to aversion? And I think this is probably personal for each of us. So maybe as I'm sharing some of my examples, you might consider some of the examples that come up for you in your life. For me, this balance with aversion has taken on a few forms. And the practice of meditation, mindfulness, and practicing looking at and exploring and reflecting upon impermanence has really impacted the way that I experience aversion in certain parts of my life. So one experience happened a number of years ago where I was invited to be the keynote speaker at a planning conference for planners and developers. I had written a book on cultural forces of suburban sprawl, and somehow they thought of me as an expert now. And I was very intimidated. The conference was going on in Phoenix. I really didn't feel like, that I should be an authority on that topic. And they were actually paying me a quite nice honorarium too. So I was feeling a huge amount of pressure and stress about this. And as I was driving down to Phoenix, I was feeling like that, you know, that fear, that aversion to public speaking that some of you may be familiar with. And there's been many, many studies that with surveys that people say that they are more afraid of public speaking than of death. So I was experiencing that and just like wanting to run and hide, but I'm driving down, and in fact, I think it was my husband was driving us, so I was able to just sit and start meditating and meditate on the experience of what it felt like to be totally, totally afraid of this, of what was to come. And as I was meditating on it, I really started to feel in my body what that fear felt like. And I started to notice like it was like this huge life force was moving inside of me. And I could feel all the energy. And as I was really feeling into the energy of the fear, I realized I couldn't tell the difference between fear and excitement. And I just started to funnel that energy of fear into just experiencing this as a new and exciting experience, and went in from a different perspective, right? Where I was just feeling like the adrenaline flowing and the life force and letting myself experience that. So that was kind of a neat way in which staying with the aversion really turned the experience into something unexpected. Another example is that I have a fairly strong aversion to being cold. And so I've really avoided the cold. You know, for many, many years, all my life, I just avoided the cold. If it was cold outside, I would stay inside. Like, why go out? You know, stay by the wood stove and be nice and cozy. But I started to develop a practice. One of my mindfulness practices is going outside in the early morning hours, first thing, and heading on the paths for about half an hour. And I started this in the spring when it was nice and getting warm and it wasn't too cold. But as the cold weather came on, I dropped the practice. I just like I didn't want to be cold, so I was following my aversion to cold, and all winter long on that first year, I stopped going outside and just meditated inside, and slowly I realized that I needed to just face this aversion to the cold, and not stop what had become a very important practice to me, and just go throughout the year. And it was really interesting to kind of watch how it was really my resistance to the cold that created the suffering. And once I just embraced the cold, and now I go out at, you know, 15 degrees in the mornings and down in mountain air, it's cold. And you know, within 30 seconds, my body heat builds, and I'm loving the fresh cold air. It's not a problem anymore. It's kind of like I dropped problematizing something that I thought I wouldn't like. So that's been really nice. But thinking about just how our resistance to things is often at the heart of our suffering. And what happens when we just do life as it is and face it as it is, whether it's a fear, instead of avoiding the fear, experiencing the fear, as in the public speaking experience, or a small discomfort like the cold, rather than avoiding it, just having a direct experience with those things that we would rather not experience, and how transformative that can be. Taking a balanced approach to aversion could look like acknowledging impermanence on a daily basis. So many people avoid thinking about sickness, old age, and dying. Does anybody in this room avoid thinking about these things? Yes. I do too. But I do have a daily practice of the chant of impermanence, and in my walks, actually, I really meditate on impermanence. So as I'm walking, I really experience the shift and the change, moment to moment, that's happening with every step, with the ground that was once vibrant plants that is that have now died and are now serving new life, and I'm experiencing that change and that impermanence as a daily practice, part of the daily practice. But this past weekend, I was visiting with my mom, and she was reflecting on how disturbing it is to grow old. And I could feel how hard that was for her. And she made this comment. She said, "You just never think it'll happen to you." And that, you know, that just that, like, that we want to live with this idea that we're not changing, that things are not, that we, or that when we're that age, we'll handle it better, or somehow we'll be in a different situation. We'll never face those kind of, you know, the distresses of aging. But I did mention to her that maybe something that might help me is that I have this practice in impermanence and a daily reflection on sickness, dying, and old age. And as I said this, I mean, she just, like, I could see her cringe. She just did not want to think about it. And I thought, oh, it's just, you know, I felt a lot of compassion for her and for myself and for all of us. We don't want to face these things, but there is something about the practice that enables us to, I think, do some important reflecting and experience the, you know, the ways in which we may be uncomfortable with these topics and the changes that we face. And so there's also, we can also reflect on the gifts that come when we are not avoiding impermanence. Like kind of experiences of gratitude and joy when we realize that this is only a precious moment now. You know, Thich Nhat Hanh wrote the book, Present Moment, Wonderful Moment. This moment is changing and it's precious, and we can have gratitude, love, and appreciation moment by moment. Or like Thich Nhat Hanh, the Zen Buddhist monk activist, has also said, you know, realize, appreciate not having a toothache, that our bodies are changing, we're gonna have all these discomforts, and so we can notice when things are feeling good, or if there's a part that doesn't feel good, there's other parts that do, and just realizing that we are changing dynamic beings, and there are gifts in that as well. So I'll end tonight's talk by repeating the chant on impermanence. All things are impermanent. They arise and they pass away. To be in harmony with this truth brings great happiness.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.